This is your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel, serving the Charlottesville area with home heating oil and propane and famous Exxon gasolines. The wake-up call is also brought to you by The Hook, an innovative weekly from the people who really know the news on Newsstands Thursday. Now with your host, Rick Moore.
We all know what the big news story was this week. How can you not? We spent the week reading and watching and talking about the events at Virginia Tech. Some people seeking out more information, some trying to turn away. Everyone being connected in some manner. All week, people approached me and said, "Well, I know what the show is going to be about this Sunday, but it's not going to be about that. Virginia Tech deserves more than we can give them in an hour. True, we could open the phone lines and argue about how greater gun control would or wouldn't have affected that young man's plans. We could debate the efforts of the school administration in alerting their students. We could discuss identifying and helping those with mental health needs. But today, is that going to benefit anyone involved with the atrocity that happened? Despite discovering so many of his writings and watching his video, we'll never really know why that young man did this. The one thing we all agree with is that these deaths are senseless. And senseless means without explanation. We'll also never see any satisfactory justice. The young man responsible for the deaths removed that possibility by taking his own life. You can look for others to blame, from gun shop owners to lawmakers to psychiatrists to school administration, but the ache for punishment doesn't mean other characters in the story are responsible for its outcome. So today we'll move on. Bow our heads, shed our tears, and say our prayers. But save our thoughts until we are a bit past the immediate pain. And that may take a while. In the meantime, bless the families of everyone involved. Ladies and gentlemen, 11:04 here on the Wake Up Call. Thank you for tuning in today. If you thought you were going to get an hour conversation about what happened on Monday of the week, not this time around. I'm one of the people who tried to turn away. I was fully sated with all the conversation about it throughout the week. So we'll save those discussions for another time. But today, here in the studio with us, Professor R.K. Ramazani. Professor, how are you?
I'm fine. Thank you so much.
Oh, I appreciate you coming in today.
I appreciate being here.
It's a beautiful day to do other things.
Yes.
And you have given up part of your Sunday to come join us. We are going to talk with Professor Ramazani, Professor Emeritus from the university and your department?
Department of Politics.
Department of Politics. And a specialist on the Middle East. And today we're going to talk about Iran versus the world. I'm sure Iraq will come into play a little bit in that conversation. Professor, you've been all over the media in your career, CNN, television, magazines, newspapers. You continue to write for the Daily Progress, special articles and Sunday papers. You've been an advisor to a lengthy career of high-ranking politicians, presidents, downward. And still, I can see the joy in your face when you come in here to talk with me on Sundays. You were supposed to laugh at that. All right, Professor, let's start. It's been a couple weeks since it happened. The issue where Iran, I guess, kidnapped. Is that the best word for that? Kidnapped 15 British sailors? Is that the right term for that?
Well, depends on the perspective. But Iranians would say arrested because of trespassing. And others say captured or kidnapped and so on. So it depends on the perspective, Rick. The questions are far more complicated, and these are, you know, catchwords, and they don't really explain anything.
Well, that's what one of the things that I hope we can do today is try to explain why that particular incident took place, sure, what its purpose was for Iran, and then, you know, we'll talk about some other issues as we go along as well. But that was my first question, was, is kidnapping the proper term for that? And you're saying that, as always, there are a minimum of two sides,
yes,
to the story.
Yes.
And arresting from the Iran side. What's your view on things? You know, you're in here today as someone who's spent, were born in Iran, correct?
Yes.
Have been in the United States since the 40s?
1952.
Are now an American citizen?
Have been for a long time.
And have done the majority of your academic work on Iran and the Middle East.
That's correct.
So what is your perspective? Which word do you use? Kidnapping? Capturing? Kidnapping?
Again,
arresting?
I think semantics, Dick, doesn't help us. What I have already done in publishing, and I would not like to repeat it, but at least I have to say, because you're asking my own perspective. First of all, we have to realize that this incident had happened similarly in 2004. There were again the question of whether it was arrest or kidnap or what have you. And Iran and Great Britain, behind the scenes or in quiet diplomacy, got the matter, so to speak, settled. But the very fact that it happened again this time took me long, long back in history. And I realized that, putting in the context of my own research and writing of many, many years, that there is a major lesson in what happened. And that is that these so-called settlements bilaterally whether in quiet diplomacy or otherwise, has never been satisfactory in the sense that it has been free of threat to peace in the Persian Gulf, which is, as you know, a strategically oil-rich region of the world and so on. So I went back and realized that I could perhaps date this kind of problem from 1628, 17th century. In those days, there were only two empires. There was no Iraq. There were two empires, the Persian and the Ottoman Empire. And they quarreled. In fact, they had many wars. And always the settlement focused again on this body of water, strategic body of water.
The Persian Gulf.
The Persian Gulf, including a river which is a boundary river between Iraq today, Iraq and Iran. And multitude of settlements have been over the centuries in terms of two sides, or even sometimes the British intervene as a mediator between Ottoman Empire and Persian Empire, and later on between Iraq and Iran. Iraq is a kind of an inheritor of that problem that the Ottomans had with Persia.
And my point is, and as someone who's been out of school for for too long, but a bilateral, you mentioned bilateral.
Two sides.
Right, that's two sides. That's a negotiation, and with British sometimes being in.
That's right.
Where eventually both sides are happy
enough
to accept it and move
exactly.
along.
Exactly. And that has never worked. Now, there are good reasons, I ask myself. The reasons are that there are so many high stakes involved in the Persian Gulf. In what sense? The world's oil market significantly depends on.
But that wasn't the case then. I mean, you're talking
I'm going to talk about that.
Okay.
I'm talking about it today. In the previous time, it was still a strategic but defined in a different sense. And that was the British interest. The Empire of Britain had an interest in both the Persian and the Ottoman Empire in terms of East India Company and British Empire in what is called India now. So, in terms of trade and commerce, navigation, shortness of routes and so on, these were even then in those centuries important. But with the advent of oil discovery, and that was done in the Middle East for the first time, the first gusher of oil was in 1908 in Iran. And obviously since, oil has become such an important stake for so many countries, both those who produce oil in the Persian Gulf, including Iran, and those who depend on Persian Gulf oil supplies that wouldn't be disrupted and so on. So the stakes are high. It involves local states, and you have eight of them there, six what is called GCC countries, Iraq, and then Iran. But then we have interest because we are a big consumer of oil. The Western Europeans have interest. So how do you somehow organize or manage, rather, all these interests, complex interests, that you settle supposedly one thing, then another thing? Now, in recent years, when we became the legatee of the British Empire, as America...
Define that word for me, legatee.
When we became the inheritor of the British responsibilities and power.
Because we became the world power country.
Exactly.
Okay.
Since then, what have we gone about that question of supply of oil? We have gone about it in terms of unilateral action. not bilateral.
We force the decision on someone else.
That's correct. We have already had two wars in the Persian Gulf, 1990-1991, and the present one, which we have been in it for 4 years now, entering the fifth year. Now, so my proposal was, and continues to be, and this is not just now, the proposals I have done ever since I started concerning myself about this thing, that the only rational way to resolve all these conflicting and converging interests is to have a collective security system, that everybody's interests would be protected, that if one country is making some kind of a trespassing, as it is called by the Iranians, then all would gang up and say that is the case. You know, kind of a similar to what we have in NATO, that aggression or offense against one is against all. So to have a security system, in 1982, Rick, I have to say, this is no self-advertisement, I was consulted by the Secretary General of the United Nations, and I wrote a memorandum. And at that time, I suggested that there should be a United Nations naval patrol of the Persian Gulf because of this conflicting interest. And I have repeated proposals ever since. Now, when Iran-Iraq war was finished in 1989, there was a resolution of the United Nations calling upon the Secretary General to consult the Gulf states for this kind of idea that I'm expressing. And nothing has been done about it. And I hate to say that the great powers, British, American, have not been willing to share any power in this area with people who own these resources. Gas, oil, they don't belong to us. They belong to these people. It is in their backyard.
We're not known much for our sharing. We still kick sand in the sandbox.
Yes, and we have an addiction to the use of force as a way to resolve issues. That's why we are stuck in Iraq today. And we could be stuck in Iran tomorrow if Mr. Contender, presidential contender McCain, in his supposedly joking and mood, would not say bomb, bomb, bomb Iran. We have now, let's face it, Iran bashing. The media is much involved, and the administration has gone out of its way to bash Iran. We are having anti-missile arrangement with the Czech Republics against Iranian missiles fired to Europe. Now, you might want to say, are we reading Iran's intentions all right? And that question, as important as it is, unfortunately requires trying to go back in history, in culture, in society, in psychology. In a way, Rick, I think our problem, I have said this long ago, and I repeat it, is that we cannot empathize. We cannot empathize.
11:19 here on the Wake Up Call. University Professor Emeritus R.K. Ramazani giving us some important background on Iran and to bring us up to the current events of Iran and the world. Feel free to dial us up and ask some questions or make your own commentary. 979-0919 for the local folks, those who are listening on some of our other dials, like Lynchburg's 89.9. The number for that, toll-free, 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS. The markets of Tiger Fuel forecast for Central Virginia and the Shenandoah Valley. Sunny today, highs 80 to 85. Clear tonight, lows 45 to 50. And then sunny again tomorrow, 80 to 85. Right now in the Valley, 66, 72 in Lynchburg, 73 in Richmond, and 73 in Charlottesville on a nice sunny day.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call, brought to you by The Hook and by the markets of Tiger Fuel, a refreshing pause on your journey to anywhere with locations all over town. Now back to your host, Rick Moore.
And we want to thank 45fix.com for their support. If you have a project but not the time, there's a simple way to find a contractor. From kitchen and bathroom remodeling, house painting to decks and siding, it's 45fix.com. Immediate, no obligation estimates available anytime. That's the number 4, the number 5, and the word fix.com. And let's take a moment and toss out congratulations to Jackson Boylan of Lovingston. He paid his pledge from the recent spring fund drive and won the fully set up laptop from PC Pro Computers. If you pledged, be sure to pay as soon as possible to get the best pick of fashion items and to be eligible for the mini contest add-ons just for NRN members. And once again, a big thanks to all the listeners who helped us succeed our hopes with over $93,000 in pledges. All right, back in action here. 979-0919, 1-877 WNRN Rocks, as we talk about Iran with Professor R.K. Ramazani. Professor, like I said earlier, it's been a while since I've been in school. I read the paper every day, and I even do more than what I accuse far too many of my friends and acquaintances to do, which is to read the headline in the first paragraph and then not follow through. But still, I don't understand why Iran would take these British soldiers. I understand that they have allies who may have agreed with what they've done. I understand that there are security issues, that it's a very important area amongst the world, both in terms of economics and politics, etc. But still, I don't understand what the basic reason or two was in saying, fine, you're on our area, we're going to arrest you. Or even, you're not on our area, but we're going to claim that you are and we're going to kidnap you because of this. But why?
Again, Rick, I tried to indicate that, let me back up for a moment. Again, for centuries, the boundary lines have not been mutually accepted by all the parties involved. And Iran, in this particular instance, insisted that the arrest occurred within their territorial water.
And I understand that.
Yeah, that's what they said.
But what did they, it seems like the potential loss,
yes,
in terms of angering Britain or the United States,
sure,
was much greater than any gain that they would have gotten by saying, no, the boundary line isn't here, it's a mile over here, and that's our property.
Yeah, but the point is that I wonder how we would feel if somebody sends boats into our territorial water. I talk about empathy.
But we're not the mid-sized country. We're not the country who has to worry about whether or not, if we go out and arrest someone for doing that, that someone is going to be standing over us looking to invade us, bomb us, or do something else.
Yeah.
You know, it's like the little kid saying, I'm not going to let you take my lunch money anymore, And then all that happened, you know, he's taking the risk of either having the bully say, fine, sorry, I'll go pick on somebody else, or saying, yeah, right, and then punching him a few times. And so that's why I don't understand, am I too much of an American to understand why Iran would finally say, I mean, truly, are they just standing up for what they think is right,
yeah,
or is there some ulterior motive in what they're doing?
Again, when I say what I say, is based on my own research and writing, not because of where I come from. Most of my life has been here. The inability of the West to empathize, that is, recognize that others think and feel as we do. That's the essence of concept of empathy. We in the West, and this is not me just saying this, I could have chapter and verses for you, Americans, British, non-Muslim, non-Iranian, scholars of theology, scholars of politics and sociology and culture, have constantly pointed out that the West's attitude toward these societies, not only during the colonial periods, but otherwise, even to date, has been one of condescending. We cannot put ourselves in other people's shoes. We can think about our own security and national interests, but we seldom can envisage that others also have interests. We talk about national security, they talk about their national security. And the fact that you pointed out, Rick, that this is kind of a, like a little one against a bully big one. It is kind of a asymmetry of power. The first book I tried to write, and that was more than 40 years ago, was to argue that these little countries are not as colonial powers have always perceived them to be, as pawns in the big game of great powers. That they also have interests, they also have methods, they also have their ways of playing us sometimes. Right now, what we have done to ourselves in Iraq and Afghanistan has been the biggest boon to Iranians. We remove their enemies, they are flexing their muscles.
Let's take a phone call real quick. Kara, are you there?
I am.
Hi, from Nelson County. Questions, comments?
I guess a comment and a question. You know, it seems of what's missing in the public debate and even in the policy debate about Iran is the lack of dialogue. I mean, the United States and Iran have not talked for at an official level for nearly 30 years. And there's also two different narratives going on. You know, for the Iranians, the source of bad relations between the two countries really goes back to the 1953 overthrow of their democratically elected Prime Minister, Mosaddegh. And for the Americans, the source of bad tensions goes back to the 1979, Islamic Revolution. But, I mean, it really, there's been just such a series of missteps and mistrust that have built up over these 30 years of both countries not talking. And we see these patterns, you know, between Iran and the United States or Iran and the rest of the world. And I'm just wondering, you know, what are the real prospects for both countries, you know, the United States and Iran, you know, perhaps including the United Kingdom, you know, what are the real prospects for those two countries sitting down and talking? You know, Representative Lantos and Representative Pelosi, when they returned from Syria, said they had interest in going to Iran, but, you know, I think that there's ulterior motives there on behalf of Representative Lantos. But, you know, and we've seen a little bit of a change in the State Department rhetoric recently. Secretary Rice said she's willing to sit down with her Iranian counterpart at the next security conference on Iraq. But you know, is this all just face measures in terms of, you know, what the United States is trying to do? We know that during the recent situation with the British soldiers, the United States offered military force to Britain. You know, what are the real prospects and what's really going on behind the scenes?
All right, so what...
Yeah, go ahead.
No, go ahead. You ready?
I am. Let me explain. First of all, I appreciate your understanding. Apparently, you are also knowledgeable about what has happened between Iran and the United States. I can briefly state, in support of your statement, that for over 100 years, Iranians perceived America as the champion of their nationalism. And the 53 coup d'etat against Mossadegh that you mentioned was a turning point. And so ever since we have, by we I mean the West really, but led by the United States, has had more or less bad relationship with that country. And we have demonized them, and they have demonized us. And that, in part, is part of the problem. Because the mistrust is mutual. We don't trust them, they don't trust us. We don't trust them because of our experience with them, such as hostage crisis. And they don't trust us because of 53 coup d'etat. Now, what are the prospects? The most important thing, perhaps, that has happened, and I hope I am not being optimistic too much, is that Condoleezza Rice has at least come to a state that she would be prepared to talk to Iran in terms of her counterpart. And this is going to happen in Cairo next month. It was supposed to happen in April, but it's postponed. Now, that is something to be glad about, in a sense, that we have constantly, by especially this administration, refused to talk, despite the Iran group, so to speak, the Baker Commission study that suggested that we talk to Iran and Syria. The administration dismissed it. Now we are coming back. We are saying, well, we will sit with the Iranians. We sat with them face to face in Baghdad. Now Condoleezza Rice is going to sit with the counterpart Iranian. I think one could perhaps be optimistic about this. But again, unless Condoleezza Rice and her counterpart Iranians could put themselves in each other's shoes and connect and say, other people feel and think the way we do, on the basis, fundamental premise of humanity, besides politics and power. So if you take an optimistic stance, I'd say maybe there is something, there is a ray of hope. If you go back and see how many times there have been start and stop in U.S.-Iran relations, again, because of both sides at times have missed opportunities to connect, then one could be pessimistic and say this is another time and another opportunity that will be lost. My hope is, and I cannot predict, that this will indeed become some kind of a basis for confidence building and mutual understanding.
Thanks for the call, Kara.
Thank you, Professor Ramadani, and thank you, Rick.
All right, boys and girls, 11:35 here in the wake-up call. Professor Ramazani in the studio. Not too often that we have someone of such expertise on a topic. 979-0919, 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS. That's the toll-free number. And if you're out riding around and you want to participate, star NRN on your Intellos wireless phone. My understanding is that's a non-billed call. Won't show up on your phone if you're Intellos wireless, star NRN. Professor, you've mentioned a security system in the Persian Gulf a couple times now, which I have taken through both your writings and the conversation today to be multiple countries watching over to make sure that no one has any particular favoritism. Why does the U.S. not support this? Is there some fear that they lose power and so everyone may turn against them at some point and they lose control?
Rick, do you remember what presidential contender McCain said about bomb Iran?
Well,
we cannot. No. This is important because you are asking why. We have, and he spelled it out, that we want to protect Israel. Now, in other words, unless we are dominant power, hegemonic, in the entire Middle East without any contender, whether it's Iran or anybody else, then it is a threat to our oil interests and to Israeli security. Now, that kind of a thinking provides a basis for some statements like bomb, So we have been unable to accept, but the world has accepted that Iran is a growing power, it's a rising power in terms of resources, in terms of population, in terms of location, and therefore a recognition has to be given only in the sense that when we have security arrangements or whatever in the area, then we would include Iran rather than exclude, which is consistently what we have done. We have, every time there has been a security arrangement after the first Gulf War, we excluded Iran, despite the fact that the Iranians actually, according to James Baker, who was then Secretary of State, Iranians were very positively helpful in the war of 1990-1991. And yet when the post-war situation came and senior President Bush went to the Congress, wanted a security arrangement that included everybody except Iran.
So I wish I could say that I understood that. I mean, and I understand what you're saying, but I wish I could understand why he would do something like that. Like so many politics, it just doesn't
make sense. Yes. And the sharing of power has not been in our way of doing things for quite some time, especially during this administration.
979-0919, 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS. Professor R.K. Ramazani in the studio today as we talk about Iran versus, I say versus the world, but it sounds like that there are enough countries with Iran that we should change our thinking on that a little bit.
Yes.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call, brought to you by the Markins of Tiger Fuel and by The Hook, an innovative weekly on newsstands every Thursday. Now here's Rick with what you can find in this week's Hook.
Well, The Hook has local coverage of the Virginia Tech incident, from local reactions to local connections. Larry Clater, president of the Charlottesville Albemarle Rescue Squad, gets on the interview hot seat. And the local party planner offers tips on your warm weather get-together. The Hook, trying to help us understand exactly what's going on in the world. Today's programming on NRN brought to you by Five Guys Burgers and Fries, Seville Reader's Choice for Burgers, Five Guys serves America's standard fresh and handmade from 11 a.m. to 9 p.m. and open until 10 Fridays and Saturdays. That's Five Guys Burgers and Fries behind the fountain in the Barracks Road Shopping Center in the Hollymead Town Center and now on the Downtown Mall here in Charlottesville. On the web, it's fiveguys.com. That's F-I-V-E-guys.com. And we also want to thank Blue Ridge Graphics. They're at Meade Avenue and East High Street, serving Charlottesville with custom T-shirts, sportswear, and professional graphic design since 1979. That's Blue Ridge Graphics, 296-9746, and at brgtshirts.com. All right. Professor, you know, you mentioned in that last segment about Israel. Is every Middle Eastern country anti-Israeli?
No. at least on surface, the leading Arab power has a peace agreement with Israel. So that's acceptance of Israel. Jordan has agreement with Israel. So that's acceptance of Israel. But when you go beyond that, you have countries in terms of politicians and people who are running the countries, like Syrian leaders or other leaders, that are hold a grudge against Israel because of its invasion and because of its occupation since the 1967 war. That Israel is an occupying power, as we are now in Iraq. But Israel in the Palestinian inhabited areas, and the United Nations Security Council has had resolutions that there should be a withdrawal of Israeli forces and recognition of Israel by the Arab states, has never happened. It has been simply on the paper. So, but when you come, and I want to say this very carefully, anti-Israeli feeling is widely shared in the Muslim world. It's not just Arab. And the key reason for that, wrongly or rightly, is the perception that Palestinians have not been justly treated. And American foreign policy, they have contended time and again, has not been even-handed in terms of economic and military aid to Israel as compared with not really any serious move in the direction of a peace between Palestinians and Israelis. So anti-Americanism and anti-Israelis ironically go together in the Muslim world. And again, the Palestinian issue is in the interest of everyone to settle. Everyone. Until very recently, this administration had really been on the sideline. Hasn't done much, anything about peace between the Palestinians and Israelis. We had advocated elections, democracy, and all right, Mr. Carter went and saw it, and others went and checked, that there was a real Palestinian election. But the outcome was something we didn't like. Well, you either like democratic elections, or you don't. This is hypocrisy from the perception of the people in the region. They look at this and say, no. America really doesn't believe in democracy or election. It was pro-American, pro-Washington clients, puppets.
Does the United States still have the ability, you know, we talked about bilateral and unilateral decisions, negotiations, although I'm not sure unilateral really goes with the negotiation. But does the United States still have the ability to to force unilateral policies on, and I still continue to use the term, a mid-sized country like Iran or Syria or anyone else?
We can. Oftentimes, in terms of nuclear issue of Iran's enrichment and so on, there have been people, and the president has said the use of force is not off the table. And there are advocates in Washington, quietly and otherwise, vociferously, looking for the day that we can indeed bomb Iran, its nuclear facilities and so on. Yeah, we could do it. We could do it. But look at Iraq, not in Iran. And well, we invaded, and we occupied. The point, Rick, is the consequences of our action. Yes, we can do it, but we can forever create another Iraq conditions in Iran or any other mid-sized country. So the world has changed, Rick. The world of gunboat diplomacy has changed. The nowadays, you know, I just, this might be parenthetical, but I think it, to me it's important. There was a world public opinion survey of 23 countries in the world. This just came out, this survey. And the central question was in the survey, conduct of the survey, was who would be more positive of a force in the leadership of the world? Do you know the answer of 20 countries' respondents was Europe, not America. And in Europe, this might be very strange to many of us, but not to me, France should lead the world, not the United States.
I'm sure that there are a large percentage of listeners out there at the moment who are rolling their eyes or cringing at that suggestion. 11:47 on the wake-up call with Professor Ramazani. 979-0919-1877-WNRN-ROCKS, *NRN, if you're using Intellos. Professor, one of the, I don't know if I read this in one of the articles that you had written or in another article or just a conversation that I had with some friends, that one of the things that has made Iran bolder isn't really the nuclear issues. It's China, because China plays such a key role in Iran's economic growth and potential. What's your take on that?
Well, that's an important question, Rick, because Iran-China relationship is very important, economically and militarily to some extent. So for the Iranians, it has always been very helpful in countering American pressure and power to be with China, and equally with Russia. This is the usual counterbalancing power, no question about it. Another thing that is occurring, and this includes, I have mentioned it in one of my articles, that the competition for oil and gas in the Persian Gulf will enormously increase as time goes on because of China coming in. No longer monopoly of the West over Middle East oil, you know, oil resources. So, yes, China is a player and will become a bigger player, I think, in relationship with Iran and other Gulf states.
Tell me, who is... I'm under the impression, anyway, that China hasn't stood up and said, we're with Iran, but I'm curious as to, with the United States trying to unilaterally determine what Iran does next. I'm curious as to who is on the side of Iran that may surprise us or may have caught us off guard. Anyone? Because the whole thing seems to have sort of fallen off the main page of world politics. It's never on the main page when there's Don Imus and other sorts of things happening. But it doesn't appear to be on the front page now that the British sailors have been given their fake Boss Hugo shirts and their little gift bags and set on their plane. But I'm curious as to, everything seems to have fallen back to page three.
That's correct.
And I'm curious if that has something to do with the American leaders, because they're really not ready to press forward yet. They need to take a step back and rethink what they're going to do next. They were sort of caught off guard by what happened. Is that true, false?
No, it is true. it is true. And one thing that even newspapers readers, if they wish, if they want to, notice is, to me, there has not been one item that would try to look at Iran's behavior or its statements objectively. Iran bashing is now the number one thing. Every item that does appear, and even the first page of the New York Times or otherwise, is to depict Iran as the world's number one enemy of America.
But that, and that's not true?
No.
I mean, you have a large country?
Yes.
With, in fact, the and again, I risk showing my ignorance,
no,
the largest Middle East country?
The largest, probably the largest in population.
They have, there's nuclear proliferation. There's anger that you cannot deny exists.
Yeah.
And so are they not the number one enemy?
No. Iran's behavior would have to be understood in Iran's historical context. From the Iranian perspective, in terms of their history and experience with great powers, their interest, whether it is arresting British sailors and Marines or otherwise, is defensive. We read everything about Iran, including going and shooting missiles into Europe, which is absolutely far-fetched, or Israel, for that matter, is false. It's false because this is misreading of, ignorant reading of Iran's real motivations. No one denies, and I would be in the forefront of those who would emphasize that nuclear proliferation is a bad thing. But Iran looks at itself and says, why on earth we should be singled out not to even be able to develop our peaceful nuclear energy to which we are entitled on the non-proliferation treaty to which Iran is a signatory. So, believe me, from the Iranian perspective, 200 years of great powers, intervention, interference, invasion, occupation, whatever they are doing is defensive. They are not interested in Israel, hitting Israel, or Europe for that matter. And the Iranian overtures to the United States, time and again, has been to negotiate these differences about terrorism, nuclear issue, and all the rest. In 2003, Rick, there was a proposal, I've written on this, from the Iranians quietly during the reformist government of Khatami to Washington through the Swiss embassy in Iran that represents America, that here are all the issues, terrorism, nuclear issue, whatever issues between us and the United States, we are prepared to sit down and discuss unconditionally. It was dismissed, and now some blame Dick Cheney and some blame Karl Rove. But whoever is to blame, the fact is that that's the way to read intention. If you have intention to hit and this and that, you will turn your back to the world. You don't say, let us talk. You don't.
11:56 on the Wake Up Call with Professor R.K. Ramazani. Don't be going anywhere. We're done in just a few minutes. But at noon, it's Les Temps-Perdue, the best of 80s and 90s alternative. Requests are welcome on Les Temps-Perdue, brought to you in part by Plan 9 Music, only on WNRN. And we also want to take a moment to thank Blue Ridge Mountain Sports for their support. Headquarters for kayaks from Wilderness Systems and Perception. Blue Ridge wants to get you on the water this summer and is offering on-water demos and classes through UVA's Outdoor Rec. Blue Ridge also has everything you need for walking or running any trail. Blue Ridge Mountain Sports is in the Barracks Road Shopping Center in Charlottesville, in Richmond, and at BRMS.com. And in case you weren't paying attention, this is WNRN Charlottesville and WNRS FM Sweetbriar Amherst Lynchburg. Patrick is up in a few moments, but we got just another second or two here with Professor Ramazani. For many people, it seems like Iran and Iraq, but Iran has been helpful to us, our enemy. Helpful to us, our enemy. Helpful to us. And now we happen to be in the bad relationship stage. Is this administration going to leave things so that Iran will once again at some point down the road be friendly with us, or will be friendly with them?
Well, President Bush made such a point in terms of a hope, but the context was the wrong thing. The context was in the name of helping democratic elements in Iran. And of course, that was immediately seen by Iranians as a regime change. That's what the Americans really want, not really helping democracy or returning to good relationship. Now, my own personal hope has always been that perhaps a deteriorated U.S.-Iran relations is an aberration in the long history of American-Iranian relations. And I hope that is the case.
All right, boys and girls, that finishes our time with Professor Ramazani. Professor, thank you so much for coming in.
I appreciate being here.
Next week, we will be talking with Todd Barnett from the Field School about single-gender education. And, of course, we're always looking for new topics, new guests. If you have something, email me, abstractme@aol.com. Patrick's up next with Les Temps-Perdue.
This has been your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is brought to you by The Hook, an innovative weekly from the people who really know the news on Newsstands Thursday. And by Tiger Fuel, serving the Charlottesville area with home heating oil and propane, Exxon gasoline, and the markets of Tiger Fuel. Views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of the management, staff, or board of WNRN. You can contact Rick at abstractme@aol.com or at wnrn.org. The wake-up call is produced by Michael Strickland. Tune in again next Sunday morning at 11 for the wake-up call, only on WNRN.